Welcome back to TechNet Radio. In part 3 of our Windows Azure IaaS series, Matt Hester and Keith Mayer discuss common scenarios in which IT pros may use Windows Azure as a hybrid solution between their on-premise and cloud service needs. Tune in as they discuss disaster recovery and storage, as well as how to migrate your SharePoint environment to a VM running on Azure. Matt, the mic is yours.
Good morning, good afternoon, or good evening. My name is Matt Hester. Welcome back to this TechNet Radio series where we're focusing on Windows Azure IaaS. Today I have one of my colleagues up north in Columbus, Keith Mayer, on the call today. We're going to talk about some exciting ways you can think about Azure IaaS and your on-premise into what Keith and I call hybrid. So, Keith, why don't you introduce yourself a little bit and tell folks about what you do, and we'll kind of get started.
Hey, everybody. Hey, as Matt had mentioned, my name is Keith Mayer. I'm a senior technical evangelist, just like Matt, at Microsoft. I'm coming to you from the complete smack dab center of the U.S. Heartland area, and Matt and I have been working a lot with IT pros out in the field around Azure and our new IaaS offers, so I'm excited to talk more about it to get together today.
So, yeah, and one of the things that I wanted to talk about today, we're going to talk about some exciting workloads. We're going to talk about SharePoint. But I think before we can talk about SharePoint, we kind of have to talk about what I'm seeing, and I think you're seeing the same as well, is Azure IaaS is a fantastic environment for stepping up. But I think IT pros struggle with, I just want to put everything all up in the cloud. They want to, you know, they want to kind of have feet in both realms. They want to have a toe on their on-premise and a toe in their Azure environment. Is that what you're seeing as well with kind of that what we call hybrid clouding?
Definitely. I think one of the big differentiators in the cloud space between how we're providing solutions and working with IT pros in the cloud versus a lot of other solutions that are out there is we're not all about trying to force everyone to put everything up in the public cloud. We're very much about hybrid scenarios because dealing with IT pros and enterprise IT environments for years and years and years, we completely understand that there's certain workloads, either because they're part of your core infrastructure or have latency or security or data sovereignty requirements, there's certain workloads that IT pros are going to continue to want to run on-premise. But at that same time, in those same environments, there's a lot of workloads that can benefit IT pros by running up in the cloud. Backup, disaster recovery, pilot, test lab environments, web-based applications and whatnot. And so there's a ton of interest I'm seeing around hybrid scenarios. And yeah, I think hybrid's actually a good way of describing it because when you think about hybrid in other industries like hybrid vehicles or whatnot, we're really talking about taking two different technologies and kind of marrying them together for the best of both worlds. And that's exactly what we're talking about with hybrid cloud, taking the benefits of an IT pro's on-premise data center environment from a high bandwidth, low latency, storage capacity standpoint for workloads that have to run consistently 24/7, and marrying that up to the burstable, elastic capabilities of a cloud platform like Windows Azure. So definitely I agree with that, Matt.
Yeah, and when we think about it, I mean, what are some of the most common scenarios? I think probably the one that I get asked about the most is, can I back up at the cloud? Because I think that's a quick way to dip your toe into the Azure IaaS environment. Not only does it give you kind of almost an instantaneous disaster recovery center, it's an effective way to do that. Have you been working with folks with that a lot?
Yeah, definitely. Backup is, as you said, really one of the first key workloads that I see most IT pros interested in, and it solves a real pain point because a lot of IT pros today still use tape as their off-premise tape backup solution so that they can carry the tapes, they can send the tapes off-site and not have to worry if the building burns down, they still have something to restore from. But tape carries with it, as I'm sure you've seen in the past too, just a ton of problems. I mean, I hate having to deal with tape all the time because not only is it unreliable if the tapes have been sitting for a while in somebody's warehouse, but just the idea of taking all of my data, putting it off on removable media, and then handing it to somebody else so they can take it on a truck someplace to a warehouse I've never seen, and I'm just supposed to trust that it's really still there and secure. I think the benefits of cloud-based backup is it's, first, a lot cheaper than tape management, and second, it gives IT pros a direct line of sight to where their backups are sitting all the time. They can pull them down without having to involve any third-party courier services or anything, yeah. And they can completely encrypt them too so that they have the security of mind, the peace of mind, that all that backup data is sitting in a completely encrypted format, so if someone tries to read it in any fashion, they can't without the encryption keys that IT pro themselves holds.
And see, I think when you talk about tape, you're talking about a guy who got a letter in the mail, you know, saying, hey, we lost your tape. It was on a truck. It was on one of those courier trucks, and we lost it. Well, it turned out about 6 months later, I realized that not only was my tape lost, that they had my driver's license number on that information as well as my bank account. How did I find that out? We're getting ready to buy a house, and we had no money in our bank account. We had our identity stolen via one of those wonderful tapes. So for me, as a customer of that, and I won't say who they were, the hardest part for me was here's the scary part from an identity theft perspective. Side note is that what's interesting about me, I went to the police officers. They had a form for it. They had just a simple form you filled out, and I got everything back within a day. It took a little longer for the bank to get my money back, but once we proved it was pretty interesting. But yeah, it solves a real world point, not only for them, but it's also a benefit they can bring to your customers. So one of the things when I think about working with Windows Azure IaaS, and I think about working with these environments, there's only two reasons people will ever use the cloud: cost and strategy, period, end of statement. So if it's going to help them save money, like in the case of a backup, or it helps them do strategy. And I think backup's an interesting because it kind of covers both areas. Mm-hmm. What are some other interesting areas that you see with Windows Azure IaaS?
Yeah, no, that's great. And you're right, backup does kind of cover both areas. I've seen a lot of IT pros actually leverage it as a migration path as well, because oftentimes if you have a lot of data that you want to move up to the cloud and start looking at hosting on VMs, if you start with backup, it gives you a way of getting at least the data up to the cloud that you can then later restore into a VM that's running in the cloud. But in terms of other strategic scenarios that IT pros are leveraging the cloud for, disaster recovery is another just huge area for IT pros, because a lot of mid-market and smaller environments, they don't have the luxury of a dedicated DR site. And so when you start thinking about marrying up Azure from a virtual network standpoint to the point where it's seen on your network as an extension, a secure extension of your on-premise data center, you can start thinking about, well, hey, I can, you know, the next step after I get it all connected, I can put an Active Directory domain controller up there and have some disaster recovery around AD. If my domain controller's on site, all go down, my data center is out, my site is down or whatnot, I still have Active Directory running up in the cloud that I can either pull back down or have people just authenticate against, up against those Active Directory domain controllers in the cloud. Doing a SQL database and file database replication and log shipping is another real common scenario for being able to spin up a couple VMs and have either DFS replication be used for file-based replication from on-premise up to the cloud to a Windows file server, or use SQL for your databases and do SQL log shipping up to a SQL instance running in a VM or a couple VMs up in Azure. And the benefit there is if you have that all on a schedule where you're doing replication or log shipping maybe on a nightly basis, not 24/7 throughout the day, you only need to spin those VMs up when you're replicating to them. You can spin them back down again on Azure, so it becomes an incredibly cost-effective DR strategy that you can take advantage of, even in really small shops. So that's DR is just a huge area. Is that what you're seeing as well, Matt?
Yeah, I'm definitely seeing that, especially from a disaster recovery, because it gives it at a very nice, effective cost point. And I think when you look at those types of things, I think what you mentioned there is like, well, how do I spin those things up automatically? Folks, if you haven't figured it out by now, all the stuff can be done with PowerShell. PowerShell is a key to learning this. I mean, as Keith and I are pretty big PowerShell fans, how would you do that? Well, you'd spin it up with PowerShell, replicate it with PowerShell, spin it down with PowerShell. So don't forget about a lot of the built-in tools, but the SQL stuff is amazing things that I've seen customers use. And we're going to talk about SharePoint a little bit. And one of the stories that got me pretty passionate about how a folk would use SharePoint, and I know, Keith, you have some interesting scenarios as well, is there's Rockford Construction Company. They're based in Grand Rapids, Michigan, and they're a case study for a company called StorSimple. Now, what they had is they had a huge problem with SharePoint on-premise. It wasn't really a huge problem. Everything worked. But their SharePoint database, their SQL environment, was north of 300 gig, which if you are working with those environments, 300 gig is a pretty big database for SharePoint. You have to do a lot of tuning and maintenance just to keep a SharePoint healthy environment. And every year his challenge is he was buying a SAN every year to help solve whatever problem it was for storage. And in construction, that can be a really huge kind of need because we're talking about, you know, not only architectural design files, but also we're talking about pictures and photos when they walk through buildings. And Rockford, they build like JW Marriott, they build museums, they build big buildings with lots and lots of data that supports that. And they do most of their client apps in SharePoint. Well, they actually looked at the cloud to help them save money, and they found that when they use the cloud, and this is what they did, they actually moved SQL their SQL database into the cloud. They used a device called StorSimple, which, for lack of a better analogy, not to go too down the details of StorSimple, it's a fantastic device, but it's really just kind of a caching proxying device, because when you're talking about gigabit files coming down from the cloud, it's a gigabit file coming down from the cloud. So how do you make that appear instantaneous? And that's what they used the device for on-premise. But what they found with this SharePoint environment is not only could they run SharePoint on-premise, they could offload their SQL database up into the cloud services, and they save money over having that physical SAN to help support their environment. And he now doesn't have to plan every year for what next year's SAN's going to be. He actually has that elastic advantage, and he saved money in the process, and then was able to do even more things with SharePoint on-premise and turn some features on inside of there. So Rockford Construction, I'll make sure we'll get you a link to the case study, but it's something really interesting way to look at SharePoint. Keith, what are some other ways that you're using or you're seeing some of your customers use SharePoint?
Yeah, and in that particular scenario that Rockford's using, you know, in smaller environments, you could get some similar results if you're running Server 2012 and Windows 8 Enterprise by taking advantage of the native branch cache capability. Yeah. Because branch cache also has some native wide area file services acceleration that really behoove organizations that are looking to run either a central SharePoint deployment from the cloud or from their own corporate data center. SharePoint has just such a huge number of integration points with Azure, you know, ranging from, you know, if you're running SharePoint in Office 365 from SharePoint Online, you have the ability to code custom applications and have them pushed out to Azure but integrate with SharePoint Online. And it can be really easy to get started. A lot of IT pros say, oh, custom application development on SharePoint, what a nightmare. But with the 2013 suite of Office, Access 2013 has been really retrofitted into a power user's SharePoint application development tool. When you push those apps out to SharePoint Online, what they're doing behind the scenes is actually provisioning an Azure database up in SQL Azure and putting all of your data there, but exposing the front end through SharePoint. And then certainly more sophisticated applications that developers would get involved with can also combine SharePoint Online with Windows Azure too. But I'm seeing a lot of interest from IT pros around actually hosting SharePoint, their complete SharePoint 2010 or SharePoint 2013 environments up in VMs on Azure for a few different reasons. Some of them may already have an on-premise solution that they're happy with, but from time to time, they need to roll through testing or evaluation of new updates, patches, fixes to either their SharePoint applications or the SharePoint infrastructure itself. And they may not have a large enough infrastructure on-premise in order to have a completely separate SharePoint test environment. As we know, SharePoint's got lots of components and that are involved in getting it to run effectively. So building out a virtual – I'm sorry, go ahead.
You know, so when you look at that SharePoint environment online – and you think about how is that different than Office 365, though? Because we have a, you know, SharePoint Online with Office 365 was just in our clouds. Why would a customer choose one versus the other? Because I think it's an important conversation. I think customization of apps is one of them, but what are some of the other reasons you're seeing customers do what you just suggested? Because I think it's a great solution over Office 365, more of the benefits in both.
Sure, yeah. No, I think the way that I think about it when I'm working with IT pros is if an organization is leveraging SharePoint in what I would term kind of a horizontal capacity, you're looking for SharePoint to provide pretty general purpose document services, workflow services, collaboration services with lists of information, and some light duty applications, Office 365, providing that as a horizontal service, a commodity type solution that any organization can spin up quickly, makes a ton of sense. But as you get into more complex SharePoint installs where organizations need to either integrate that better with their own on-premise identity management solutions, their own line of business applications on-premise, their own custom application front ends and whatnot, that level of integration and customization really requires them today to think about bringing SharePoint in-house. And the great benefit of Azure is you can still bring SharePoint quote-unquote in-house into your data center or private cloud, but have it living on an extension of your data center up in the Azure cloud as a set of VMs that you then manage just like just as though those VMs were running in your on-premise data center. So it becomes a natural fit for a lot of organizations.
Yeah, and once again, one of the things that we talk about our cloud services is if at any time they said, you know what, I need those VMs to be back on-premise, the great thing about Azure IaaS, they're VHD files. You bring them back down, you have a Hyper-V host on-premise, and you basically spin them up locally because you own that data. We're not going to lock you in to that kind of environment.
Definitely. And you know, with applications like SharePoint, where you're trying to think about how they best architect up in Windows Azure in a public cloud platform as a set of VMs, there are some different principles that IT pros need to start getting comfortable with in terms of how they think about multi-tier applications like SharePoint in a cloud platform. Does it make sense to go through some of those principles together, Matt?
Yeah, absolutely. I think you have some things you want to show, and then you want to take a look at some of those wonderful things that we can actually do in Azure IaaS.
Sure. So, hey, Matt, when we're thinking about planning out line of business applications, multi-tiered applications in particular, like SharePoint running up in the Azure cloud, it makes sense to take a step back and kind of think about how cloud platforms like Azure organize resources. Unlike on-premise deployments of applications, where a lot of times on-premise we use a scale-up model in the past where we try to run a few VMs that are really big VMs, especially for SharePoint. A lot of sites do, you know, one or two big web front-end servers with app servers included with them, and then big database servers and domain controllers and WAC servers and whatnot. Well, cloud platforms like Azure are really based on the economics of the public cloud and being able to scale out. So up in Azure, we have a kind of a container mindset of having VMs that are running a common application being scaled out across, having that application scaled out across multiple smaller VMs, and then running those VMs inside of a cloud service container. The cloud service container acts as a container for common sets of VMs, and it also provides some built-in networking services, like a built-in Azure virtualized firewall and load balancer that can be used for opening up inbound internet traffic to VMs that are running inside that cloud service. And so the idea in a lot of cases is not to think about scaling up to support really big VMs on public cloud platforms like Azure, but scaling out to a strategy that we can add as we need more responsiveness out of our application, we add more VMs and then use the firewall and load balancer that's provided by the cloud service to load balance out across them. And then if we have multiple applications, maybe we have SharePoint and some other database applications running up in Azure, maybe Active Directory running up in Azure, we can connect those multiple cloud services via a common Azure virtual network, which I know in the last episode Harry had stepped through with you and the guys on how to build out a virtual network. And then kind of the end result of that virtual network is being able to establish a secure site-to-site VPN tunnel that goes back to our on-premise network where our corporate users are actually sitting that are ultimately accessing SharePoint. And so that scale-out model, as we start thinking about it in terms of migrating SharePoint into a set of VMs in Windows Azure, you know, we want to kind of break that mold where if we think about our current on-premise deployment, while we could take a bunch of very large scaled-up virtual machines and simply copy their virtual hard disks up to Azure and spin up a very similar scaled-up architecture, the problem with this approach in Azure is that cloud platforms like Azure are a pay-as-you-go model. And so if you're using very heavyweight VMs that have lots of cores and lots of memory, because at some point throughout the day or week or month, you might need that extra resource, those extra resources, you're paying for those resources if you're using scaled up VMs 24/7. Where in a scaled out model, you can ebb and flow the number of virtual machines at each layer of your SharePoint model in response to the demand. So during your month, if the first week of the month you have huge demand on SharePoint for applications that are running there, you can scale up more web front end or application server VMs in a load balanced configuration and then scale them back down to a single instance or a couple instances, if that's what you normally require. In between those times, you're only paying for the virtual machines that you have online and running in Azure while they're provisioned and up and running to support that.
So one of the things here, that I think the important point is you have to kind of rethink your architecture a bit.
Definitely.
Right? If you're going to include the cloud, like I know Rockford, they rethought their architecture, and they also realized that, hey, we needed a little bit of a caching device because of large files, because if they think the same mentality, they're going to pay for that up in Azure, and they may not see some of those cost savings. But that's where I think one of the key points when you're looking to migrate this, you have to kind of think kind of how that environment was really going to impact and test it to make sure that it does save you the money and does provide that either strategic value and or business value back down to IT.
Yeah, no, definitely. Yeah, rethinking the architecture when you're taking advantage of any public cloud platform, Azure or any other platform, really makes a lot of sense for SharePoint. And as we take a SharePoint structure and start applying it to more of the public cloud and the economics of the public cloud, we oftentimes end up with a configuration that looks very much like this, where we take our web front-end servers and our SharePoint app servers and SQL servers, and we provision them as a set of virtual machines inside a common SharePoint cloud service. And then across each of those, if we think about web front-end, app server, and SQL as being separate tiers of a common SharePoint application, it gives us the ability to use smaller VMs in a load balance configuration for our web front-end and have the cloud service firewall load balance across all active running VMs that are there. It allows us to similarly do load balancing across our Office web application servers, our SharePoint app servers, by having a couple instances of each of those, and then do mirroring back and forth across our SQL databases, or split off our data into separate content databases that are living on separate smaller instances of SQL servers so that we can scale that out and support more SQL Server VMs over time as well. And then for Active Directory, you know, SharePoint is very dependent on Active Directory, like many enterprise applications are. The way that I normally recommend thinking about Active Directory is putting the Active Directory VMs into their own cloud service, because while Active Directory serves as a dependent component for SharePoint, it also likely is going to, down the road, serve as a dependency for other applications that you're hosting in the Azure cloud as well. So by isolating Active Directory, DC, DNS capabilities into their own cloud service, it makes them more portable and more integratable with other application workloads that in the future might be living in separate cloud services. And then certainly that VPN tunnel from our virtual network to our on-premise world plays a critical role to allow our corporate users to have their traffic load balanced across that VPN tunnel and into the various roles that are running up in Azure. And also, at the same time, allow some of those SharePoint application workloads to be able to communicate across the VPN tunnel should they need to pull in line of business application from application data from existing line of business applications that are running on the on-premise network still.
Yeah, and one of the things I know Harry and I talked about that VPN tunnel, that actually requires a little bit of hardware to be officially Microsoft supported, although there are some ways to kind of work around it for testing. That is going to have to be a specialized piece of hardware. And just like creating a virtual network, it's just a matter of setting up that local network pointing to whatever that VPN device is, and you're pretty much good to go. It's fairly straightforward as long as you have the devices in place, correct?
Yep, exactly. Yeah, and the hardware isn't that scary of a requirement, because most IT environments on-premise currently have a hardware or set of hardware appliance devices that they're using as their firewalls. You know, they could be Cisco or Juniper or other firewalls that support standard IPsec site-to-site VPN tunnel capabilities in addition to providing internet firewall security. And those are really the appliances that we would use to terminate that VPN tunnel on the on-premise side of the network. So chances are many environments already have the hardware requirement, but if you don't, it's good to note that there does need to be some piece of hardware on-premise that's needed to terminate that tunnel.
Yep, just wanted to make sure that we're aware of that, because we talked about that a little bit last time.
Yep,
so why don't you show some of this to us, Keith?
Okay, yeah, let's step through the configuration of building out this basic environment and how it looks in the Windows Azure portal. So, Matt, here we are over in the Windows Azure portal, the management portal, and I'm on the Cloud Services tab of that portal just to show how my cloud services are currently set up. So I've got an Active Directory cloud service that's separate from my SharePoint 2013 cloud service. My Active Directory cloud service has the Active Directory VMs running inside of that, whereas the SP 2013 cloud service is being used to compartmentalize all of my VMs for running the SharePoint application workload and SQL and whatnot. And if we drill into either of these cloud services and go over to the dashboard tab, it's kind of nice because what it will allow us to do is, from the cloud service standpoint, it gives us kind of a summary of what's running within that cloud service. So as we look down our quick glance, for instance, it shows us all of the input endpoints through that cloud service firewall that we have opened across each of the VMs that are running within the cloud service. So we've got a web front end, a database, and an app server for SharePoint all running inside this common cloud service. And as we scan across and look at monitor, the monitor tab, it'll show us each of those VMs that we can pull up on a common chart side by side. So if we wanted to look at CPU, memory, network, or disk utilization across all the VMs in a particular cloud service, we could just go down to add metrics and add those additional metrics in. So it's kind of nice to look at it from the cloud service perspective. Right now I have just one of each type of tier of my SharePoint application represented as VMs in my cloud service. And in order to set them up initially, I didn't create this cloud service from the cloud service tab. It actually gets created initially from your virtual machines tab. When you set up your first virtual machine, it'll ask you for a DNS name for that first virtual machine. So the first one I set up was my database server, and I plugged in this DNS name. And then for each of the others, my web front end and my app server, I simply attached them to my database server. So let's see how that happens as we go through the process together. Let's go through the process of adding another VM as maybe a second web front end server into this common cloud service, and then that way everyone will get a chance to see the process involved of configuring a VM from the Azure portal standpoint for running a SharePoint workload. So I'm going to go down on my virtual machines page to the bottom toolbar, and I'll click on the new button in the lower left-hand corner. Because I'm on the virtual machines page, it automatically opens up compute and virtual machine as my normal choices. And I've got two choices, the quick create choice for quickly setting up kind of a standalone virtual machine for a real simple application. But in order to do more sophisticated multi-tier applications, I want to use the from gallery choice. That gives me more options on a multi-page wizard. When I select from gallery, you'll see our various platform images. Now, today, we don't have a SharePoint platform image that's already in Azure prepared. So instead, what we would do is we would initially go through the process of oftentimes building our own, starting with a Windows Server 2012 data center base platform image, and then bringing SharePoint or SQL components as needed into that base image. We can certainly sysprep and customize those images to create our own images for each of those SharePoint tiers. I see a lot of customers, a lot of IT pros doing that. But for now, let's just start off with building it from the base Server 2012 data center image. I'll click Next. And like all of the images, it asks us to pick a version release date. I think this is really a cool feature when you're building VMs in Azure that you can start with a copy of the platform image that's been prepared and preloaded with the latest round of cumulative updates and not have to go back to the beginning. And when you set up your VM for the first time, apply 9 to 12 months worth of security updates and whatnot back to that VM. So I'm going to start with the latest release date.
Well, and as you fill this out, one of the interesting things with that date as well, depending on the nature of the app that you're putting up. Now, SharePoint's fairly Microsoft friendly, but being able to roll back to an older date, maybe when you first created the farm, might start you at the same place where everybody else was. Because remember, folks, in this environment that Keith is building and showing, you're responsible for all the updates and patching and controlling. And if you're adding the server a few months after the one, you may want to start where everybody else started so you can bring it up to the same specs that were consistent. Because could very well be you start started at a sooner update or an update the other ones don't have might cause problems. So always make note when you're first creating these systems, that date's pretty important. And usually with most things like SharePoint, you can go to the latest date, but be aware, remember, you're responsible for updating these things. So if this is 6 months down the road and you have a new server that you're going to be staying up for that new cloud service like Keith is doing here, you may have to choose an older one, and then you have to bring it up to whatever that current level is for that SharePoint environment.
Yep, good points, good points. So under virtual machine name, I'll key in the computer name that I wish to use. So I want to make this for my new virtual machine. So I want to make this my second web front-end server. So I just key that in as my computer name. And then for username and password, I'll need to type in a default local admin username and password. And this is actually a little bit of a new area for Windows Azure. It used to, for Windows VMs, default to local administrator, but now we've got some additional security capabilities in here to specify a non-default administrator username and a password. And when you're entering your credentials in, these are the credentials that'll get provisioned initially for logging in as an admin on your new VM. So just like any other admin credentials, you want them to be really secure, because initially when any VM is created, it will have RDP access opened up from the internet. You don't want somebody guessing your password and logging in to your VM and changing your password on you and taking ownership of your VM. So just be careful about security. And then for size, I've got some different choices for VM size. Now this really harkens back to that conversation we were having a little earlier on scale up versus scale out with SharePoint. I see a lot of people provision SharePoint and jump right to the extra large size right away, but you really want to test in your environment with your SharePoint configuration where that SharePoint VM size should be. And you don't want to go any larger than what you absolutely need, because the pay-as-you-go Azure pricing is priced per core per compute hour. As you go up to larger sizes of VMs with more cores and more memory, you're going to be paying for that. The nice thing is, after the fact, you can always adjust this afterwards if you find that you need more or less memory. And one of the other great tips that I see a lot of IT pros using in Azure to try to reduce the size of their VMs and ultimately reduce their cost is to take advantage of Windows Server 2012 Server Core for your SQL database servers and Active Directory domain controllers, and then take advantage of Windows Server 2012 Minimal Server Interface for your SharePoint server roles. You can't run SharePoint on Server Core today yet, but you can use the new Minimal Server Interface with Server 2012 that provides you with kind of a halfway point between the full GUI and Server Core. It gives you some graphics support, but it still reduces memory and reduces disk consumption quite considerably over the full GUI. And that type of memory and disk reduction in some cases could be the difference between choosing between medium and large for some SharePoint installs, where if you're hovering just at about 3 to 4 gig of memory in use for SharePoint and you go back to uninstalling the graphical user interface and go down to the minimal server, and it helps you drop below that, that could allow you to run in a medium configuration and have the cost of running that VM as well, because you're using 2 cores versus 4. So normally, as a rule of thumb for SharePoint application and web front-end servers, I normally recommend starting out at a medium size and then looking at the utilization once the VM is up and running of memory and CPU, and determining if you need to go up or down from there. So I'll go ahead and select that, click Next, and now under virtual machine mode on my next page, I get prompted for whether I want to make this a standalone virtual machine or connect it to other virtual machines. Well, this is part of my SharePoint multi-VM application configuration, so I definitely want to connect it to other virtual machines. And all I do is I pick one of the VMs that's running inside of my SharePoint 2013 cloud service to connect to. I can connect to any one of them, and when I do that, it'll automatically bring this VM into that cloud service and interconnect it with all of the other VMs that they're running on a common internal network behind the common cloud service firewall. So I don't have to worry about picking a particular VM. I can pick any VM that's in the cloud service I wish to connect to. And then I'll just go through the process of filling out my storage account and making sure that my virtual network and subnet configuration is correct. And on the last page, I have an availability set. Now, the availability set is a feature in Windows Azure that allows you to use a common name for load-balanced VMs. So for web front-end servers in SharePoint, for instance, in for app servers in SharePoint, where I'm load-balancing the connections to those common tiers of my application, I want to use a common availability set. So when I configured my first web front-end VM, I created an availability set when I was going through the process, knowing that I was going to create a second VM down the road. Now when I'm creating my second VM, I simply select that same availability set name. And what that does is it tells Azure that these two VMs are part of the same tier of my application, and when it's placing these VMs on Azure infrastructure equipment, to put them in separate update and failure domains, essentially in separate racks of equipment within the Azure data center, so that if there's a update that needs to be performed on one rack of infrastructure equipment, or there's some type of power failure, for instance, that affects a rack, it's not taking down both halves of my application, because each VM, being part of the same availability set, is being placed on separate racks within the Azure data center. So I'll go ahead and click the OK button, and just like that, it'll start provisioning my new VM, and it'll walk through, just like all the other VMs, the process of provisioning it, starting it up, running through a mini setup process, shutting down and restarting. It'll take a few minutes to go through that process, but once it's complete, I can use my toolbar at the bottom to connect in and start loading up and configuring SharePoint on that new web front-end server. So it's a pretty straightforward configuration process as you're walking through that. It can be done very systematically. Once you have that foundation of how your architecture needs to evolve to support a cloud platform model.
That's awesome. So now down the road, could they have also generalized that system after you installed SharePoint and got all up and running and used it as one of their common VHDs?
That's a great question. So with SharePoint, you can create a general SharePoint image, but you have to be careful. You can install the SharePoint bits, but before you go through the farm configuration and installation, that pre-installation wizard of SharePoint where you start configuring things, after installing the bits, that's when you do your sysprep to generalize it. That way, when you bring up a new VM, it has all the bits installed, but they're in a non-configured state, and then it's just going through your configuration wizard to initially set up that VM as part of either a new SharePoint farm or a pre-existing SharePoint farm.
Oh, fantastic tip. Keith, that's awesome. All right. Well, hopefully everybody enjoyed that. Keith, thank you so much for your time. We'd look at how you can get SharePoint in the environment, and it's not as hard as you would think. I think Keith offered a lot of great tips, especially if you want to sysprep and generalize those systems, when to do it and when not to do it to make your life a little bit easier. But I want to say a special thanks to Keith for hanging on to the radio show and showing us some great tips on how you can use SharePoint in Windows Azure IaaS. Keith, you have any parting words?
Hey, thanks so much, Matt, for inviting me to the episode today. It was great talking with you and with all the other IT pros that are joining us today. Look forward to our next episode together.
Awesome. Thank you, everybody, and you all have a great, great day.